welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Who's our sponsor this hour, Bill?
Our sponsor is Team Power. Team Power, those guys over there, I mean, if you you want a tractor or you want something fixed out on the farm or even in your yard, they work on mowers, tractors, farm equipment. They work on it all. Go by and see them. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And they got some great deals going right now on Kubota and John Deere tractors. And their phone number is 226-9226. Or you can get them on the web at readingtractors.com. Team Power. Those are the guys.
And I just want to warn you that Bill is much better at the commercials than I am because we have recorded shows for April. And next week and subsequent weeks, you'll hear me do a bad job with that commercial.
Oh, no.
You know, it seems easy, and I always give you a hard time, and then all of a sudden I had to do it, and I was like, oh, I suck at this. It's bad. I got better as we went on.
Okay, well, at least you're giving them a warning.
I did. I'm warning you. We're going to be gone for just a few weeks. We have got some dynamite shows coming up for you, and since Earth Day is, I don't know, at some point at the end of the month, I try to block it out, but Idiotic Earth Day is this month. And so we have done, let's see here, easy for me to say that I don't have the right page up. Dun, 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 dun. Here we go.
Done like four shows in the can, right?
Yeah. Okay. So we have Dr. Willie Soon, who is really the world's foremost expert on the sun, which initially seems like an odd match for us. But he is really, really strong on this whole climate hoax that's going on, does a lot of speaking. He's in Canada this week at a conference. But sunlight's the best disinfectant for the climate hoax. That'll be next week. And he actually, kind of funny, we don't have a lot of scientists out there, especially really good ones, who also do stand-up comedy. And he's a funny guy. You'll like that one. And the 21st, we've got CFACT and Climate Depot with Craig Rucker and Mark Morano. And those guys did a great job. You'll learn a lot. Probably won't listen on Easter, I suppose. So happy Easter to you. But later in the week, definitely tune in. We'll have that all posted for you. And they did a great job. That's the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. And they do a really solid advocacy for all of us who realize that climate policy is going to ruin our lives. And the, you know, green new mess and all that. They talk about all of that. Then the 28th, Alex Newman is on, selling global warming to our kids. And he does a terrific job. He's a really interesting guy. And then the last hour of that on the 28th is the former founder, the actual original founder of Greenpeace. They're trying to erase him from the history books, Dr. Patrick Moore. And he was a wonderful interview, lots of information. And by the way, if you think the coral reefs are dying or bleaching or whatever and oceans are rising, please tune in on April 28th, 2019 and listen to Dr. Patrick Moore because he crushes it.
Yeah. Ocean acidification.
Oh, yeah. Ocean acidification. We have to listen to that all the time.
Yeah,
so it's really fun to listen to an actual PhD in ecology tell you about some of this stuff. And so we had some really good, have some really good experts
and
on.
I asked him, too, if he was part of the 98% of scientists. And
we asked all of them that.
Yeah, and he informed me that there is no 98% of scientists that claim that.
How inconvenient is that?
Yeah, that's very inconvenient.
It's just terribly inconvenient. And so the other, I don't know, we'll call it a major event, even though it's a yucky major event. On April 20th, I don't even know what it is. It's like National Pot Day or something ludicrous. But we have our guest, Dr. Philip Drum, on with us today. And he has been on with us before. I actually linked his previous shows. And since we just seem to be doing more and more on this topic, so I actually put a tab at the top that's labeled pot. So at wethepeopleradio.us, you can go there, and I got a pot tab up top, and that will take you to all the shows we've done with him and people on related. Dr. Libby Stout was in there discussing the relationship with marijuana and the brain, which is not good. So, all right, that was like lots of announcements.
Yeah.
Boring stuff. Did we do all the boring stuff, Ashley? Feel like we covered it all? Ashley's our engineer in the other room. We don't get to talk to her anymore. She's just behind this
this we're learning sign language.
This class.
radio sign, totally different language.
Yeah. I still get to make faces at you, though.
I know, and you give me these little hand signals. I'm like, is that a bad one or a good one? What does that mean? So, anyway, we've spent a lot of time together this week. So, Dr. Philip Drumm is a pharmacist, received his doctorate in pharmacy from the University of California, San Francisco. He is a licensed pharmacist for over 31 years. He has a wide range of experience from community pharmacy practice, a residency in hospital pharmacy practice, and a hospital-based oncology pharmacist. So he's done all sorts of things, and he's kind of like the original fire hose guest. We just pretty much open the water tap, and then he just blasts us with tons of information. So he always asks what we want to talk about, and we always tell him we're not qualified. We'll just sit and listen.
We're not worthy.
we don't know. And then Corinne Gasper, and I'm going to double check her name. I haven't actually spoken with her before, so Corinne, feel free to assist me on that. She is going to be on with Dr. Drumm this morning because she lost her daughter on July 24th, 2012. Dr. Drumm's sister was killed by a drugged driver, and Corrine's daughter, Jennifer, was killed in 2012. So she decided to prevent another needless tragedy and help educate and protect innocent lives in their community. Her mission is to positively impact and educate the society on the harms of current-day marijuana through tools and strategies of safe driving. So we're going to talk a lot about driving today because I think that's something that, you know, you see these people that are all over the road. We've always had people who are kind of all over the road, but now, you know, all over the road has a whole different meaning.
Yeah.
All right, you guys.
And it's pervasive. I mean, I was in a parking lot the other day and drove by a parked car. It had two guys in it, passing it back and forth. Well, you know, they're going to leave the parking lot at some point.
Sitting there smoking pot in the parking lot?
Oh, yeah.
Terrific.
Yeah. Windows down. It's legal now, you know. Come on.
Yeah, do whatever they want.
Yeah.
Okay, Dr. Drumm. Corinne?
Yes, hello, good morning, or good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. Thanks for being on.
It's afternoon.
Good afternoon, this is Corinne.
Oh, Corinne, I got it right. Okay.
You did. Thank you so much. Not many people do.
Because I'm like, oh, it's two N's, one R, so it's going to be Corinne. Uh-huh. All right, very good. Sounds like we have a little, there we go. Little feedback there. We'll try not to overfeedback you.
Corinne, if we can get you closer to the mic, that would be great.
Okay, let me see what I can
do.
Maybe just to pick up the hands if you're on a hands-free, Corinne.
Okay, can you hear me better now?
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, much better.
At the risk of turning it into a Verizon commercial, you sound lovely.
Can you hear me
also,
now?
Also, if I could just start off real quickly.
You go.
Amazingly, and I'm sure there's plenty of others. We lost our family members within a week because mine was July 17th of 2012, and Corinne lost her daughter on July 24th of 2012.
Wow.
Lost my sister in Washington. She lost her daughter in Ohio. So when people want to pretend that this isn't happening, it is.
And it's not hurting anybody.
Listen to the lies of the pot industry that no one dies from marijuana. That's a lie because we had our family members die.
Yeah.
And it had nothing to do with anything other than marijuana users getting behind the wheel of a car and killing our family members.
And that's something that they never want to talk about. They want to talk about how it's harmless and how it's natural and blah, blah, blah. But they never talk about what happens when they get in a car. That's a huge, huge story.
And so many stories have been perpetrated on the American public that you can actually drive better when you're high, that you drive slower. Yes, this is what is being told. And in my case, my daughter was driving through an intersection and was T-boned by a man driving 82 miles an hour. And he killed her at the scene, and he walked away basically unharmed. And it's such a misnomer that people are harmless when they're high. It's simply not true.
Yeah, I've heard that you're I'm more focused. I can focus more when I'm high. That's just a crock.
Sounds like something a pothead would make up.
The fact that they drive slow. And so in the case of my sister, he was going 48 in a 35, and he hit my sister head on. And so they don't drive better. They don't drive slow. These are all lies being perpetrated on Americans.
Mm-hmm.
This is And an interesting talk that I went to since I spoke to you guys last, I actually gave a talk at the North American Cannabis Summit in Los Angeles. And there was a speaker, an ophthalmologist from Massachusetts there, that actually even kind of explained it, actually even what happened to Corrine's daughter, and I told her about this. The ophthalmologist told us about how people with marijuana, under the influence of marijuana, actually have tunnel vision.
Wow.
And they lose their peripheral vision. And so that means, and they also lose their above line vision. And so they get a tunnel, if you will. I'm sure people have heard of tunnel vision. And so they get tunnel vision, and they lose the overhead and to the sides, okay, which is not good when you're driving a vehicle.
No, it's not.
So that's why they didn't see the traffic light overhead or to the sides that were red in the case of Corrine's daughter, and he went through the red light and didn't know that he was doing wrong until he smashed into the side of Corrine's daughter's car. So that really explains why these things are happening, as well as why they're killing pedestrians and bicyclists. I just saw yesterday on the news, they were talking about an increase in 33% in the number of pedestrians in Concord, California being hit, and an increase in 25% of bicyclists being hit within the last 5 years.
Holy cow. Well, hold that thought. We've got to take a real quick break. When we come back, let's talk about the vision, because that's a huge part of it.
Look at you, Bill. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us. We'll be right back.
What shall we do about them?
I've been told you never slow down, you never grow old. I'm tired of screwing up, I'm tired of going down, I'm tired of myself, I'm tired of this town. Oh my, my, oh hell yes, honey, put on that party dress. Buy me a drink, sing me a song, take me as I come, cause I can't stay long.
Let's dance with Mary Jane, one more time to kill the pain.
We're back. We're speaking with Dr. Philip Drum and Corrine Gaspar about the effects of marijuana. And Dr. Drum, you were talking about the effect on vision, particularly when driving a vehicle. Pick that up where you left off. Hello? Uh-oh.
Sorry, I'm here. So it's work done by Dr. Denise A. Valenti is where you can find this information. And she talks about the retinal changes that occurs and kind of goes through the tunnel vision aspects, also having difficulties seeing at nighttime. So, again, I'm not an expert in this area, but she would definitely be the person to kind of look into her research. She talks about the CB2 receptors that are in the eye and how they're affected by the cannabinoids, and again how light may affect the ability to see, and that if people are coming towards them with lights on in their car, that they're blinded longer than other people, and they talk about visual function absence, and so again it's where they have this. Basically, it's in the center of their visual field is what they can see, and they can't see things above or below or to the sides very well.
Okay.
So it's very concerning. One of the other things I'd like to kind of move into is kind of, again, we kind of briefly touched on our stories about what happened to our family members, but what I'd like to do is kind of tell you then, okay, so we lost a family member to a marijuana-impaired driver, both of us. And so what I'd like to educate people about is how we're treated in the justice system as a result of this. This is not alcohol. Alcohol, I think our justice system understands, you know, 0.08 or higher. It's an automatic guilty. And if it's less than that, then they start having to go through rigmaroles as to whether they were impaired or not. That's not the case with drugs. There are no drug levels in the state of California that are acceptable or, more importantly, unacceptable. And so that means they can drive as high as they want. We have difficulties right now in getting people to understand the science that it already is out there. We know fully well that officers can detect, our DRE, or drug recognition experts, can detect marijuana presence with 96.7% accuracy rate of marijuana impairment. That is better than they can for alcohol.
Okay, but if they find that you're driving under the influence of marijuana, you're saying that there's no set level where they blow into a tube, you're guilty, you go to jail. It's just if you're under the influence at any level, are you arrested?
Well, it is illegal to drive while impaired under the influence of any drug. But to prove that is in the court of law, not by science, but in the court of law, it's very difficult because you have defense attorneys that will then throw as much garbage against the wall to try and get to confuse the jurors to not understand science.
And,
so what I'd like to do
say,
is kind of let Corrine kind of tell you how this played out in her case, and I can come back and tell you how it played out in my sister's case.
Well, in my own case, there was nothing really mentioned in the newspaper about the man that killed my daughter. The headlines read in the paper, car hits business, woman 22 dies. When he hit her, her car was thrown across the road. She didn't even step on her gas pedal, brake. She went right through the front of a lube stop building and took down the building on top of her. The media never talked about the fact that this man was a medical marijuana user. He crossed over the state lines from Ohio, from Michigan, where he was from, to Ohio, and he was driving erratically and slammed into the side of my daughter. She was just 22 years old. She just graduated from college at the top of her class on a lacrosse scholarship. She was a hardworking, incredible person who was going to go into law enforcement. She got her degree in intelligence and analysis research from Notre Dame College. She was wiped off the face of this earth. We went to the trial and we thought, well, at least maybe we'll get some justice here. But the guy pled down his case from a felony one to a felony three, and he ended up only getting 2 years in jail. And I was so upset about it, and I said something to them. This isn't enough, and they said, but don't worry. He will spend 2 years in jail. He didn't. He spent 17 months there, and now he's back home with his family living the good life. And we have to go on every day living without my beautiful daughter. It's been very devastating, and I know it has been for Phil as well.
That's horrible. Yeah, and so at that trial, how much did they talk about the marijuana aspect of that crime?
You know, I didn't exactly explain it right. There were several hearings, and his charges were pled down, and he actually never did go to trial. He'd accepted a much lesser plea.
Okay.
They let him stay out of jail. His birthday was in December. They said, we're not going to put you in jail until after your birthday and after Christmas. So you can spend
nice,
that with your
nice
family.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
All the mercy was shown to the man that killed my daughter.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, what do you say?
What do you say? Something like
wow as well.
And then the judge says at the day of the sentencing, he says, I just want you all to know that I have a lot of pity here for both families.
Like,
which is really the icing on the cake.
Yeah. Why have pity for him? I mean, he was driving under the influence and killed somebody.
Now, and I made an important point there. This man had a medical marijuana card from Michigan.
Oh.
And it was not legal in Ohio at the time, but this is what I'm saying. If one state legalizes it and not another, that doesn't mean you're safe. Anybody can drive anywhere in a car.
True. Well,
right?
Just out of curiosity, because I'm assuming you guys have done more research on this than we have, when they prosecute drunk drivers, is this crazy level of leniency also applied?
I really do believe that
drunk drivers,
it does
no.
apply. And in our case, this man had several other convictions before this happened. Mm-hmm. I don't.
And
what
the same
about
was in my
though?
Sister's case. My sister's murder had 42 court appearances and 49 years of life. He had multiple DUIs for marijuana. He was on probation at the time for his second felony involving marijuana for beating his wife while under the influence of marijuana and alcohol. He also, his first felony was for selling marijuana and cocaine to an undercover cop. So these people, and oh, by the way, in the state of California now, they can petition to have all of their drug charges wiped off. And so these people now will be walking into the courtroom as angels, and you will never hear about their past convictions.
And potentially, and potentially working around children and everything else.
Yes. And this man ended up with no drug charges. Even though this was proven, he ended up with no drug charges.
How does that work? What was it called? A traffic accident?
It was called vehicular homicide.
Reckless driving is typically what they'll be called for. Reckless driving. Going 82 miles an hour, probably he's a little reckless, and that's kind of all they consider him. In my sister's case, my murderer was driving without insurance, state mandated. He went to jury trial for reckless driving. The judge threw out the marijuana blood evidence, the marijuana that fell out of his car, the marijuana dispensary cards, all of his marijuana history that I already gave you. His admission of marijuana use, a week before, but his blood level was still positive. Three hours and 13 minutes later, which at this point in time, following their recreational law, he would have been guilty of driving while impaired. But at that time, they had, just like California, no legal limit, and therefore anything was acceptable. And so the judge threw out all the evidence. The jury heard no information about marijuana involvement at all. This was an 8-car pileup that was caused by him. And so he paid $5,000 after his arraignment to stay out of jail. The judge gave him the ability to pay also bail if he wanted to stay out after the jury verdict, which he paid $10,000 to stay out of jail until his sentencing 1 month later. And he owes us $22,700 still. Again, this happened in 2012. It's now 2019. He's paid us $20. Less than $20 of that $22,700 restitution as ordered by the state of Washington. And, of course, we know how much they love their drug addicts and drug dealers up in the state of Washington. They haven't forced him to pay his restitution. So I'm kind of stepping on their tail in the next few days, and we'll be seeing if we can get some media attention to see if we can get, their chief justice of their superior court, if they believe in restitution. If their DA's office believes in their restitution, if their judge in King County still believe in restitution, because he still owes us restitution.
Unbelievable. All right, let's take a break.
Self out of jail.
That
so
is.
We know he can come up with the money.
Yeah.
Oh, no kidding. But they're letting him slide.
That's the ball game.
Nice.
And we were told it was a courtesy service. The victims unit told me, within the last month, that it was a courtesy service that they were providing. I failed to ask them whether they were being paid or if they were volunteers. I suspect they're being paid in this victims unit.
Wow.
And they're being paid to do what exactly? Because they're not representing
cover for the victims, apparently. Or cover for the perpetrators. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Philip Drumm and Corinne Gasper, both of whom have lost loved ones to drugged driving, marijuana in particular.
And his eyes were clear for the first time in a while.
Turn the quiet up, turn the noise down, let this old world just spin around. I wanna feel its sway, wanna feel its sway, put some feel good in my soul. Drank a little drink, smoke a little smoke. Want a little more right.
In case you guys haven't noticed, there are a lot of songs about marijuana.
Yeah, it's definitely becoming part of the culture.
It's almost limitless.
Formalization.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I think you mentioned about your case was they did not allow any mention of marijuana in the trial. Which first thing I thought about was, when they talk about how there's no real statistics on marijuana and auto accidents, that's going to really skew the numbers. I mean, how often do you think that happens?
Oh my! You hit the nail right on the head.
You go, Bill.
You really did. That's the problem. When a police officer will pull someone over and they detect alcohol on them and they get a reading enough to arrest them, they don't do any further testing for drugs because they already have their evidence that this person is under the influence. So when these numbers come out, a lot of times you don't see really how marijuana has impacted this.
Right, right.
And it's the same as in court cases. This was completely wiped off the slate. That he was smoking marijuana, medical or otherwise.
Right.
Yes, and it's very disheartening.
And yeah, it's you hear that a lot. That there's no evidence that there's people have auto accidents under the influence because they drive slower and they're more focused. It's all a bunch of crap because they don't report it like they do everything else.
Yeah,
well, let me tell you, I was just a normal happy mom. When this, we were happy she was graduate. She had just graduated from college. I didn't know anything about what was happening with marijuana. And that's why I have to do what I'm doing today, because so many other people are out there like me. They're focused on their kids. They're focused on their lives. And they don't realize what dangers they're in out on the road.
Yeah.
This is why we have to bring it to their attention.
I'm really glad you do, because I think they're just, particularly in California now that we have legalized, totally legalized with recreational marijuana. And like I say, I see it everywhere. I smell it everywhere.
Yes.
And it really, you really need to be concerned about when you're out on the road, who's high. Last night we were driving along and a guy in a truck next to us was in our lane more than he was in his lane. We had to just completely back away from him.
Yeah, every time we got to a stoplight, they were like a full wheel over in our lane at the stoplight. It's like, okay, are you? I mean, it used to be, move over, Grandma was always the thing. You used to always blame old ladies. Now it's like,
no,
could be anything, and you can't trust it. So I guess what I'm curious about from you guys is, why do you think that, I know that some of the lawmakers at the local level, could be city council, could be county, I know that they are being lured into all this, and I'm sure we'll talk about potency later, but this is not the pot from when they were in high school. So there's that. There's a fundamental misunderstanding of the commodity we're dealing with. But why is law enforcement buying into this? Why is law enforcement letting them slide?
Well, they're being overwhelmed, and the other major problem is I can give you guys a something to take a look at as well. It's called Seattle is Dying. It is a video that was done by a local news station there in Seattle talking about their drug problems, and I found it humorous over the fact that only one of the other reporters happened to even mention the word marijuana in the middle of their story. But at the beginning, they talked about how this has been getting worse over the past 5 to 10 years. Well, that's exactly when they legalized recreational marijuana, was 7 years ago.
Really?
I'm surprised that this is happening there. But during the video, it's the 12-minute and 13-second mark, is when they talk to law enforcement anonymously, because they wouldn't do it live and on camera. But when they talked to them anonymously, they read off the statements that they were getting from law enforcement. And they said, once we arrest them, within 24 hours, they even talk about a case of a man that crawled through the window on drugs, beat up a woman, and within 24 hours, he was back out on the street. So they identified and said, this is a major problem with the DA's office, and the judiciary. And boy, did I run into that with my sister's case up in King County. And so those are the people to blame because they're not enforcing the law. Law enforcement can go up and arrest, and within 24 hours, these people are back out on the street. And so when you have no enforcement through the legal system, you're doomed.
Yeah,
they're not enforcing the laws. They're doing plea bargains. Over 90% of cases are plea bargained. That's reality. And so they're not even going to trial. In fact, my murderer, for his 42 court appearances, never went to trial. Guess who made him go to trial? And so, again, I could give you some figures on talking about testing. In the state of California, only 14% of the live at-fault drivers in fatal cases had their blood drawn for drugs. 14%.
Wow.
In 24%, so one in four dead people, that at-fault driver who is dead, laying on the coroner's table, in which he's performing an autopsy and probably getting paid over $3,000, the coroners are only in one in four cases performing the blood test to determine what caused that blunt force trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So only one in four are they willing to pay the $150 to $200 drug test to figure out what caused the blunt force trauma.
Again, that's going to skew the numbers.
Money for this state, and I can wave my hand over a blunt force trauma victim and say, no, don't do the autopsy. Let's check for blood. In fact, there's two bills, one going through the Senate, one going through the Assembly, and I can find out those numbers for you after the break, that's going through that will force our coroners to draw blood in these cases, because right now it's discretionary and they're only doing it in one in four cases. That's how they are hiding. In fact, our good old Governor Edmund G. Brown Jr. last year vetoed the bill that would have created a database for reporting of alcohol, cannabis, and all other drugs causing DUIs. He vetoed that bill. Right now it's just alcohol and all other drugs.
And we know that numbers drive.
Not have the chutzpah to override his veto. And they are bringing the same bill back this year. Do you think Gavin Newsom will sign this bill?
Oh, absolutely, Gavin. I have full faith that he will not.
No.
Corinne, you were going
to... Like, hold on, we have to take a break. I'm going to kill Bill. No, okay.
Okay.
Like the movie.
Go ahead, Corinne. What was your point?
Well, I was just going to say, in any action in society, the numbers are the key. You know, they do surveys. Numbers are key. So when we don't have the numbers, but, you know, it stops the action that we need to stop this from happening.
Absolutely. Now that it's legal, so much of this stuff is just being swept under the rug. Because
exactly.
I think they just... They feel they don't need the numbers. It's a done deal, and we're just going to, I guess, clean up the mess. It's ludicrous.
It is.
We need to know what's causing and how many people are out there on the road high on drugs, not just marijuana, all drugs. They need to test for that, and they need to record it so that, that in the future, maybe we can pass some laws that will help prevent some of this stuff. It blows my mind that they don't allow it to even be mentioned in court cases. That's just crazy.
It's totally crazy. And Phil talked a little bit about impairment, but I mean, it's total body impairment. It's mental impairment. It's muscle impairment. The visual impairment that he spoke about. This is an hallucinogenic drug that they're taking. And the rate of the drug today isn't the 1 to 3% like back in that we smoked back in the not that I smoke but that were smoked back in the 70s. Today the lowest rate is between 10 and 25%, and a lot of these other more powerful drugs like dab, the oil that's been extracted from the leaves of the marijuana plant are up to 98% loaded with THC. And
yeah.
I don't think people realize what they're actually ingesting.
No, they absolutely don't. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the impairment issue, because it's you hear people all the time say, "Oh, I'm more focused, I'm more relaxed, I'm not stressed out." Well, in reality, it's you're describing a state of mind behind the wheel of a car. Do you want somebody that's their motor functions have slowed down and reaction times have slowed down and
but
they're relaxed.
You're getting that information from a pothead. So slowed down is all what do you call it? Relative.
Yeah,
and as
totally
we know,
relative.
They don't slow down necessarily. That is fake. So we'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Philip Drumm, who is a pharmacist and deals with a lot of drugs, the regular kind. But he's a real expert in all of this. And his friend, Corrine Gasper, whose daughter was murdered by a marijuana-using driver. Not good. You can find all the information about this show and shows we've done on this topic and others at wethepeopleradio.us.
Maybe did a bad, bad thing. 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 You ever loved someone so much you thought your little heart. Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my eyes. Was I unwise to leave them open for so long?
We're back. You know, one of the things I was thinking about at the break was, do either of you have any information on how companies are dealing with the new marijuana culture and as far as company rules, hiring practices? I know with law enforcement, well, Aaron, you know how many they have to go through with, like, CHP, how many people they have to go through.
Yeah, the California Highway Patrol, they need like six, well, this is a couple of months old, but they needed like 650 officers. And they said they will go through 100,000 applicants to find those 650 people.
Yeah, 100,000.
And a huge percentage of the problem of those people that fall out is their involvement with marijuana.
Yeah, and I know that's got to be an issue with
it's an issue with the sheriff's office and
sure,
the city police.
With any company.
The statistics with Highway Patrol were so outrageous.
HR's got to be just going nuts trying to keep a working staff that is drug free, and it can't be getting any better now that they've legalized it, at least in California. Have either of you heard any information on that count?
Well, I know a little bit about this. In fact, the same paper that was promoting people to take 10 milligrams of THC during the daytime to expand their mind, the Seattle Times, reported recently that one in four people at work, were surprise, surprise, stoned at work. One in four. I happened to actually talk about this as well to a Home Depot representative who made it very clear to me, oh, no. He goes, they can at any time check me, ask for a urine test, and if I pop a positive, I could be fired. So that if they find Delta-9 THC or Carboxy-THC in their urine, they can be laid off. And also, the very interesting one, which was great to hear, was that their workers' comp claim, if they are positive with in their urine with THC, they will not be paid through their workers' comp claim. if they're injured at work.
Oh.
Mm.
So that I found very heartening to hear, because what's going to happen is there will be injuries at work. So any of the industrialists out there that are listening to us, you really need to start waking up about this issue, because as you guys are pointing out, this is going to become a major hazard at all of our workplaces. I'm aware in February it was the state of Maine. And so once the pot industry gets this into one state, they tend to then be able to replicate it elsewhere. And in the state of Maine last year, they were trying to float a bill that was going to say employers can no longer test at work. And they were going to say that you could test a person prior to work, like what you're talking about with trying to hire a CHP officer, where they're testing before they can bring them on to work. But once you've hired them, they're yours.
Wow.
And so what they do on their own time is theirs. And so they could be smoking their marijuana or consuming, 100 milligrams, or in the state of California, up to 2,000 milligrams of THC before they step over the threshold, and they're good.
See, that's the part that I don't see how they're going to be able to control that. I mean, you can test at work, but how do you know, particularly with marijuana, when it stays in your bloodstream for so long, or in your blood for so long?
In your fat cells.
In your fat cells, yeah.
Before,
you could smoke, and I think it's like 30 days it takes for it to screen out. So you get tested at work, and maybe you smoked at a party 3 weeks ago. You test positive. How are they going to handle that? Because you're not getting stoned at work, but you do have it in your system. So is that impairment?
Yes. The reality is, especially chronic users have chronic impairment. That's been now documented. It's in the scientific literature.
Okay.
In fact, places like the Canadian military came out with their recommendations, because Canada now has, thanks to Justin Trudeau, their prime minister, who pushed this issue, the Canadian military now is extremely concerned over this. Clearly, with people operating guns and working in the military and flying airplanes.
Yeah.
And so they report that no use within 28 days of flying an airplane. They also report no operation of a wheeled vehicle within 24 hours of last use. The Canadian Medical Society also came out and said 24 hours from last use.
How would they know?
And so, well, we could test in the saliva, but again, yeah, some of this is going to be, for something like that, it's going to be on the honor system almost.
Yeah.
Saliva is positive for 24 hours after use. So they could do a salivary test that would test that.
Okay.
Again, blood is a very, very, very poor indicator of intoxication. It's not to be used for intoxication. As you mentioned, it goes in the fat cell, and the largest fat collection in your body is between your ears.
Yep.
It's your brain. And so if you really want to find out how much is in the fat stores, you should be doing brain samples. Okay? That's where we should be testing, and that will never happen. Okay, so we have to use
the return of
methods.
The cranial screw top that Steve Martin joked about in The Man with Two Brains. It's going to be real.
Yeah, so we need to actually piss them like we do frogs in our high school lab to render them immobile. We're going to have to start doing that if we really want to find out what's in the brain. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So reality is that we have other, again, what the DRE officers do is standard field sobriety tests, which are accurate, again, with 96.7% accuracy rate. If they fail two of the four standard field sobriety tests, they accurately were predicting marijuana presence in the blood, okay? So they were able to predict. But again, chronic users have chronic impairment. They are slowed. Their mentation is slowed. Their visual acuity is impaired. So this lasts for a long period of time, even though blood levels may be low, or, what people want to consider, oh, well, that's too low to say that they're impaired. No, they're wrong, because what you're looking at is water, and what this is fat soluble. You're not looking at fat. You're looking at water when you're testing blood.
What would be an effective test other than a blood test?
Yeah, do the field sobriety test, because you told us that before, but it has been a really long time ago.
Okay, well, a couple things. So let's start with what the U.S. Department of Transportation uses. It's a urine test. And so a urine test, yes, will be positive for a long period of time, because these people are chronically impaired, okay? And so they use the urine test. In fact, there was a study by Del Bozzo in Italy in which the Italians used a urine test for drug detection. And what they did was they found a tenfold difference between those people that were just simply weaving down the road and those that were involved in a crash based on their urine carboxy THC level, which is the metabolite. So if they find it in your urine, that is a good indicator of you potentially getting involved in a crash. And therefore, the U.S. Department of Transportation, in fact, the Italians use the same level of measurement that the U.S. Department of Transportation uses. And so the U.S. Department of Transportation, for all sensitive travel type of operators, so what it's for is your interstate truckers are under this guideline, your school bus drivers, your ship operators, your airplane pilots, your airplane mechanics, et cetera. So when an event occurs, they then typically test the driver, a urine test, for all drugs except alcohol. So all drugs have cutoff levels for all drugs that they're looking for then if there's an event that occurs. There's one thing I wanted to mention, too, that I don't want to fail to miss. It was something that you actually opened up with before you started today's program with the news. And in the news, you talked about Samantha Josephson. And again, just like her mother said, you need to remember Samantha's name. Samantha was the University of South Carolina student that got into the car that she thought was an Uber car that was being driven by Nathaniel Rowland.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what they found in Nathaniel Rowland's bloodstream when they arrested him?
Oh, pot again?
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
He was under the influence of marijuana at the time they arrested him in New Zion, South Carolina.
So much for it calms me down and makes me mellow.
Like Alex Berenson's book, Tell Your Children, is warning the American public about that it makes people psychotic, schizophrenic, and they have a lot of the people that are out shooting people, you know, causing this type of damage, they are marijuana users. And this was yet another case of a marijuana user attacking this student once she got into his car. This is reality, people.
Yeah.
This is reality land that's hitting us right in the face.
Yeah. We can't gloss it over.
Marijuana.
Yeah.
And when you talked about the incidence of marijuana going up and that you're seeing people out on the roadway, through the estimations that we've done and looking at the FARS database, the Fatality Analysis Reporting System across the United States, that if the incidence goes up at the same rate it's been going up, the incidence of marijuana being involved in fatal car crashes will equate the incidence of alcohol in 2021. And at that time, the two will meet, and that's when the incidence of alcohol being involved in fatal crashes will equate the incidence of marijuana involved in fatal crashes.
Wow. And this is all at the same time that they're talking about, you know, we just need to make it legal across the country, take it off Schedule 1, make all those changes, because that'll just make everything better.
Yeah, we're losing one Californian a day already easily. And those are again, this is based on the fact that we're only testing 24% of dead drivers.
Holy cow. Hold that thought. We've got a hard break coming here with the news. Our guest is Dr. Philip Drumm and Corinne Gasper. We're talking about the effects of marijuana, so it's another piece of the puzzle. Stick with us. We'll be here next hour. Welcome back to We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Team Power, our local John Deere, Kubota, tractor dealership in Shasta Lake City. These guys do a great job doing all your repairs, sales, parts. They do it all up there. And they're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, just south of Phil's Propeller. And you can reach them on the phone at 226-9226. Or online at readingtractors.com. Give them a call. Get your get your stuff tuned up. Spring's right around the corner. I know as soon as it stops raining, that grass,
as soon as the sun comes out,
it's going to grow a foot a day. Don't get lost out there in the jungle without a mower that runs good. So give them a call, and they'll take care of you.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, fitting too. We have a lot of shows on environmentalism coming up here for the rest of April. Today is actually April 7th, 2019, in case we replay this show, which we probably will, because it's great information for you. But when that happens, sometimes the, I don't know, things have changed, or there's been new information, or I don't know. I don't like to confuse people, get them all upset. But this is not only 420, the birthday of Hitler, but it is also apparently like pot day or I'll have to get our guest to clarify that. I really didn't do much research on that, but 420 seems to have some magical properties. I'm guessing it doesn't have anything to do with Hitler, but who knows? Maybe it does.
I think 420 started, isn't that when it's okay to smoke at 420 in the afternoon?
Oh, and in the afternoon, it's a time of day, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Day to end
of
day.
Except I think most places stay open till 5.
And so then so they're all
kind
at work.
Of a problem.
Idiotic Earth Day is also this month, and so we've done our best to give you great insight on the climate hoax. We've got some amazing experts for you teed up for the rest of the month. You can find all of that at wethepeopleradio.us. If you like the things we're doing and you'd like to help out, please pitch in. We're always looking for sponsors, big ones, little ones. You know, we don't have to do your commercial for you. You could do your own, or you could just be a silent sponsor.
Yeah.
You could hide in the bushes.
Yeah.
If you don't want to actually be officially affiliated with us, but you would like to hear what comes up. And if you've got ideas for shows, please go to wethepeopleradio.us, send us an email, or give us a phone call. Both of our information is on there, and we would love to hear from you. Okay. Our guests are continuing on from the hour previous, and we hope that you will listen to that if you haven't already. You can always go to the website and listen commercial-free this afternoon. Once Robert takes all the commercials out. Thanks for that, Robert. And we're talking about marijuana. Excuse me. I was going to talk about marijuana, except I was busy choking.
Kind of give you a little bit on 420 and some of our recommendations on that. Is that okay?
That would be terrific. And that is Dr. Philip Drum, who is a pharmacist for the past 31 years. Super smart guy about all things about drugs. And then his friend, I don't know how you know each other than you both had a loved one killed within a week of each other because of a drugged driver. And Corrine Gaspar is with us as well. So that'll be the other voice you hear. All right, what's the deal with 420 anyway?
Well, by the way, that is how we know each other. We've both been active. We're activists in getting the word out about drunk driving. So that's how we've connected. He lives in California. I live in Ohio. So, yes, I'd like to tell you a little bit about 420. It does raise the risk of impaired driving by a huge amount. I think Phil might know that number. There's a campaign put out by our Highway Safety Department called Drive High and Get a DUI. And what we recommend is if you are going to party on that day, if you do partake, to use an Uber or a Lyft or a taxi or have somebody drive that is not impaired. And be aware that you are considered, you know, there could be marijuana in your blood and you could be impaired up to 24 hours of use.
And the brutal part of it is a Saturday this year, so I'm sure that will raise the...
We're urging all police departments to increase, roadside checkpoints and also to have extra cruisers out on the road to detect who is driving high on those days. We urge all police departments across the country to do that.
And do we have any idea, someone in the chat room wanted to know, whether Uber and Lyft are doing anything to minimize usage by their drivers?
Well, that's a good question.
Does know anything about that?
About it.
Well, that Uber driver in South Carolina wasn't, and I don't know that. I don't know if those people are mandated. I know, whereas taxi cab drivers could undergo like regular people to have to be tested. I'm not sure. I'd heard some rumors about that, but I don't know. Just remember, Uber and Lyft, you're getting into somebody else's car.
Right.
You don't, and they're not required like taxi cab drivers to, show their competencies and things. So just be fully aware of that. that I've never taken an Uber or Lyft for that reason, knowing that fully well. Although, you know, in a city like San Francisco, their Department of Transportation has allowed marijuana cardholders to use to drive you in a taxi cab in San Francisco. And we do know from our FARS database, again, one Californian is dying on our roadways a day, easily. One Californian is dying on our roadways every day, 365 in a year, easily, from a marijuana-impaired driver. So I want people just to have that sink in. You know, how much is a life worth to you? Is it worth having 365 deaths easily? There's probably many more than that because we're not testing these drivers. And again, that percentage increase on 420 is 12%. There was a study that was done recently that looked at 25 years of the Fatality Analysis Reporting System database, 25 years, and they compared 420 versus 413 and 427, and they found a 12% increase in fatalities on 420. That's equivalent to increased number of fatalities that are seen on a Super Bowl Sunday. So we know what happens on Super Bowl Sundays. People are drinking alcohol a lot, just like New Year's Day, just like Labor Day weekend. And so, again, we're asking if any law enforcement's out there, please, please, please put more officers on the roadway, put more sobriety checkpoints out. We need to make our roadways safe. And, oh, by the way, 421 is Easter Sunday. People will be impaired for easily more than 24 hours. Again, the Canadian military saying 24 hours. And so if they are starting to smoke at their 4:20 p.m. time, which is where this came from, that the students in Marin County would tell everybody at 4:20, let's go out and smoke dope. That's where this came from. And now has become an international phenomenon. And they equate it now to April 20th because that is 4:20. They were looking at from 4:20 p.m. to midnight, and they found this 12% increase in fatalities. And it was very smart of them to compare it to the 13th versus the 27th because the lighting during that time of year is the same. So you don't want to compare 4:20 versus, say, 9:20 or 10:20, you know, October or September. You want to do it at the same time of year, and that's what they did. And they compared the same time frame, 4:20 p.m. to midnight, and they found this 12% increase in fatalities.
That's a lot.
If you add one beer to that marijuana, your risk of being involved in a fatal crash goes up to 6 to 8-fold. That's what the scientific evidence shows.
Wow.
6-8-fold increase in being involved in a fatal crash.
But do they do the blood testing to figure out how many of those are marijuana versus alcohol? Or is it just impaired?
The issue is we know what's happening on 420. It's marijuana use goes up on 420.
Sure.
We do have reports of marijuana in the FARS database if the sites are doing it. Remember, in the state of California, they're only doing it 24% of the time in the dead driver. 14% if the driver lives and kills somebody else. So our data is very, very poor, and yet it's already showing a 12% increase in fatalities on that day. And again, one beer added to that joint changes the rate from double with marijuana alone to now, and that doubling was with old studies. Okay, that was with the 3% THC. That's not what the 70 to 90% THC that we're seeing now in these vaping cartridges that children are using. And I just wanted to add to the issue about the smoking. Again, cigarette smoking is going down. Cannabis smoking is going up, right? in teens. Okay, that's just the facts. And in places that have legalized edible use and dabbing is that 70 to 90%, is going up, and edible use is going up. And so if parents are seeing, and this past week, again, I'm a pharmacist, so I've signed up to the Food and Drug Administration, and I received their warnings. And so I received a warning this past week about the warning of children vaping using nicotine in these vaping cartridges and suffering seizures.
I heard that.
I happened to see a video Within 2 years ago, and you can look this up, it's on YouTube, it's, you know, you can put in Portland high school students and you can and marijuana use, and you'll find it. They talk about mooking, they call it mooking, and that's a combination of tobacco and marijuana that they smoke, and it causes seizures. And these kids will tell you how dangerous that is to combine the nicotine with the marijuana, that really induces seizures a lot. And I suspect the seizures that they're seeing is probably due to the combination that the FDA is warning about, because the FDA, you know, is kind of looking a blind eye at marijuana, but they're pointing fingers at nicotine causing seizures with this vaping in children.
Huh. And hold on one second, Corinne. We've got to take a really quick break. When we come back, it's all you. We'll steal the fire hose from Dr. Drum and we'll give it to you. You're listening to We the People. Please join us online. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? When you
change, change, change.
All you.
Hi. Well, I think the most important thing I want to say is the marijuana industry puts out a message that no one ever dies from marijuana. And I think the shocking thing is there's a lot more people out there like me and like Phil that have been devastated by people driving high on medical marijuana or regular marijuana. And, you know, I think a lot of the other argument is this is going to take away the black market if we legalize it. But that's not shown to be true.
Yeah, they say that all the time.
Yes, it's actually expanded the black market in many areas. Another thing I get really concerned about is what are we telling our children? If we're legalizing it, are we telling them marijuana is okay? I think that's a big question we have to ask ourselves and ask our legislatures.
I think that's exactly what they're saying by legalizing this. I mean, it just sends the message that it's now we realize it's okay to smoke pot, that it's not harmful.
Right. And we know that that's absolutely not true. And in children with developing brains, their brains are developing, they say now, up to the age of 30. And it can actually lower the IQ of a child. It can stunt their ability in many ways. And, you know, I just don't think this information is getting out there to the kids and to the parents. And I think a lot of people live in kind of a bubble. You know, they think it's not going to affect my family. Well, I happen to know many people that have thought that, and their children have become addicted to marijuana very, very quickly and without their knowledge until it was a real crisis in their family.
That's another big-time myth, that you can't be addicted to. It's not an addictive drug. And for people who want a very detailed explanation on that, I would encourage you, go to the website, click on the pot tab at the top, and look at the show we did with Dr. Libby Stout. She went into that in great, great detail. You guys, what have you seen or heard, or, you know, things that you can cite for folks on the addictive nature of this?
Well, as Corrine said, it's a hallucinogen. Okay,
no,
it's in the class of hallucinogen. Okay, so auditory visual hallucinations. And so we're putting a hallucinogen now out on the roadways. It is a controlled substance drug. Marijuana is still a CS1 drug by the Food and Drug Administration, okay, by our federal government. There's classifications of CS1 through 5, and it has to do with addictive potential as well as withdrawals. Okay, and so you do go through withdrawals for marijuana. It takes a long time because it's fat soluble for it finally to leave the body. So it takes 2-3 weeks before you start going through withdrawals from not using marijuana. So it's still in the brain that entire time. It's slowly leaching out if they stop. And they actually, the DSM-5 came out in, it was over a decade ago now, in which they do now have a definition. DSM-5 is the diagnostic medical standards that they use for, and they diagnosed that there's a thing called cannabis use disorder, and I think Dr. Libby Stout talked about that. And so it is an addictive substance, and there's an abuse disorder that goes along with it. Again, these are the controlled substances are addictive substances, and so as a CS1 drug, it's addictive. And that's why you see them having to use more and more and more, and the dosage goes up. And then typically what ends up happening is they end up going to other drugs. They end up going to heroin, methamphetamine, benzodiazepines. They start using then other drug classes to get their high because they're no longer getting it from the marijuana. And, you know, this marijuana from the stores are expensive. It's much more expensive than the illegal market, the black market. Again, the black market expands when you start having, because the law enforcement doesn't know who's legal and who's illegal.
Sure.
And here's the other fantasy, right? One of the big selling points was that you're going to get tax dollars, right? They want to talk about the tax revenue. Okay? All right, well, let's talk about the tax revenue. Okay, what did they promise? What did Kamala Harris promise as the Attorney General when she drafted up Prop 64 for us to vote on? What did they promise? They promised $1 billion in tax revenue. In fact, Edmund G. Brown Jr. told us that, put that in his budget. We will get $1 billion. $1 billion. What did they take in the state of California in 2018? $470 million.
That's a long way from a billion.
That's 47%. Okay? So you're 53% away from what you estimated. What business can you run coming in at 47% of your estimate? How long are you going to stay in business?
Well, and that doesn't, if it was a business, you'd have income and expense. So on the expense side of the line, you have all of the law enforcement, district attorneys, medical. You look at all these people who potentially are not insured.
Free emergency room visits.
Going to the ER. I mean,
exactly.
And so for those of us who are not medical professionals and not pot smokers and all that sort of stuff, the addicting thing totally made sense to me. When someone explained, I think it was Dr. Libby, she had said, well, if it's not addicting, why do you go through withdrawals? And it's like, oh, ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
Right.
You can't go through withdrawals on something that's not addicting.
What's going to be happening in the state of California, there's a bill, AB 286, that's requesting to drop the marijuana tax by 27%. When was the last time the alcohol or tobacco tax went down?
Yeah, and why would we incentivize that?
Yeah, why would they lower it 27%? It's
because the black market's going to get up and leave.
Exactly.
They're just going to walk away.
Right.
Because the black market's just going to disappear like they already promised you that it would. Mm-hmm. So they're going to drop it by 27% from 15% to 11%. That allows you to buy more pot.
Oh, absolutely.
That allows you to do. That's what our legislature is promoting. A 27% reduction in that $470 million.
Well, and then also, I watched a program here a month or so back about pot production in California. And the bottom line was, with all the regulations, fees, inspections, all the things they're tagging on legal pot growers in California, they can't grow it and make a profit. And a lot of them are saying, we're just going to go back to growing it illegally because we can make a lot more money, and we have made a lot more money and not got caught in the past. So why would we subject ourselves to all this legal stuff? And the black market has actually gotten bigger since legalization.
That's right. And again, let's just look at the tax dollars taken in the state of California. Okay, So there's three different fields, and why I guess, and I asked this when I gave my talk, and of course nobody answered it. And Lori Ajax had already run out of the room. She was speaking before me. She's the cannabis pot czar of California. That I asked the question, how come the cultivation tax was going up, but the sales tax was going down? So to me, that means they're making more, but they're selling less. How does that happen? Again, the commerce law of the U.S. Constitution prohibits you from selling something in one state and bringing it into another that will cause damage. The Commerce Clause of the United States Constitution, which is not being followed by our federal government, would prohibit marijuana leaving the state of California. So all that cultivation should be sold here. So the suspicion is it's not being sold here. Or if it is being sold here, it's not being taxed.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, one of the big issues they had on this program I watched was a lot of buyers were coming in from out of state, buying it in California and shipping it off parts unknown.
And that's illegal per the U.S. Constitution.
Sure, but they really don't care. I mean, the laws, you know, it's the laws are for people that want to obey the law.
And do we think that people that were illegal drug dealers are all of a sudden going to start following the law?
Exactly.
Sure. Just like gun laws. Make more gun laws, more criminals will follow them. I mean, it doesn't work anywhere else, so obviously let's just do that. Let's take our half-hour break here. It's not a half-hour long. It just happens at the half-hour. I guess I should rephrase that. Let's take our half-hour break right now. We're just going to sit around for 30 minutes. It's only 2. Let's not panic. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Philip Drum.
What are you, Chuck Woolery? 2 and 2.
2 and 2. No, you're Chuck Woolery.
Oh.
We'll be right back and figure out who Chuck Woolery is.
Yeah, right. It's all going to rock. Whether we like it or not, the best I can tell, the world's gone to hell and they're all going to miss it a lot. All the whiskey in Lynchburg, Tennessee just couldn't hit the spot. Got $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, it's all going to pot. $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, cause it's all going to pot.
This old man and me, we're at the bar and we're having us some beers and swapping night on cares. Talking politics, blonde and redhead chicks, old dogs and new tricks and habits we ain't kicked. We talked about God's grace and all the hell we raised. Then I heard the old man say, God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy.
Yeah, beer seems kind of like not a problem anymore.
Yeah, easy on the beer, big on the crazy nowadays.
Yeah.
All right, so got... You know, roughly 20 minutes, 25 minutes left. What do you want? What are some other things that you'd like people to know that you know that they're not being told?
Well, I just wanted to add one more thing about 420.
Sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
And anybody out there that's concerned, like Kareen and I are, again, we've lost our family members already. I just have a brother and a mother left. That's it. And so you really need to be thinking about, you know, your family, your lives, and the risks involved now in 420. And so one of the things that we're also recommending is that, Kareen mentioned the Amber Alerts. Again, drive high, get a DUI, is something that I know I've seen Amber Alert signs, and I would strongly encourage that. people contact their local law enforcement and tell them you want to see that on those Amber Alert signs on April 18th, 19th, and 20th. And we want to educate the public that driving high is not acceptable and you will get a DUI. And so we need to encourage people to let their law enforcement know that they expect to see that on April 18th, 19th, and 20th. I think that's a great way to help educate the public that this hazard is coming their way on Saturday, April 20th.
No, I think that's a great idea. You know, the drunk driving policies and programs they've had out there for several years now, I think have been very effective. I think people do think twice about getting behind the wheel and drinking. I mean, the people I talk to say, I'm not even going to take a chance with that. I'll call a cab or I won't go out. But that's not the mentality with marijuana. Marijuana, I mean, people don't think twice about it. And I think...
Yeah, and it's because they were told that you drive better, you have better concentration.
Right.
And if I could just, I want to throw this in. Just a couple weeks ago, there was a survey that came out in Michigan where 800 medical marijuana users were asked, do you ever drive high? The shocking results were 56% reporting driving within 2 hours of using marijuana, 51% said they drove a little high, and 21% said they drive while very high. And these were just the ones that admitted to it.
Right.
And there's about 270,000 Michigans that have permission to use marijuana. But in California, that's eight times the amount at 916,000. So imagine how many impaired drivers there are out there.
Right.
And just think about your family being on the road.
Sure.
You know, especially... I mean, inexperienced drivers. I mean, even the most experienced driver with what happened to my daughter and Phil could not avoid what happened to them. But we make a distinction when we talk about this. We don't talk about this as being an accident because it wasn't an accident.
No.
These people made all kinds of decisions to smoke pot, to get in the car, to drive. And so we want people to know that these are car crashes. They're not accidents.
Well... This is no different than, you know, you go running through a crowded room waving a steak knife. You're going to stab somebody.
Exactly. Exactly our point.
Yeah.
And the other concern, I think I spoke to this before, was the time of day when this happens. Again, these people are using because they have to, because they're addicted, because they don't want to go through withdrawals and they're addicted, that they're using before work, they're using after work. And so those are high traffic times. Before work and after work. So my sister was killed at 6:20 in the morning, okay, that we saw a spike in the FARS database that shows 7 to 8 in the morning, and then 4 to 8 at night are when the marijuana crashes occur. Those are peak driving times on the roadway,
right?
4 to 8 p.m. And then when you combined alcohol with marijuana, now it was 6 to 10 p.m. because they spent those 2 hours in the bar.
Right.
And again, remember what I warned you about, alcohol and marijuana, 6 to 8-fold increased risk of being involved in a fatal crash. One other area that I'd like to jump into and tell the truth about is CBD. I think there's a lot of information about CBD, and it's all misinformation. And again, the pot industry is doing a fantastic job at their propaganda. Okay, so CBD was approved by the Food and Drug Administration. Hey, why they're not doing their job and prohibiting the sales of CBD is beyond me as a pharmacist, okay? I don't think they're doing their job. I don't think the Drug Enforcement Agency is doing their job either, especially when I hear and see about that it's being sold in CVS and Walgreens over the counter.
It is?
Yes, this is a CS5 drug, controlled substance 5, okay? Part of the reason why is there's no such thing as CBD that's free of THC, which is the psychoactive component. So when they're selling you CBD, there's THC in it. And I've seen multiple cases across the United States of, hey, I was just using my CBD rub or I was using my CBD oil and I popped a positive for THC. Well, yeah, because there's THC in that CBD, THC being the psychoactive component. Didn't they tell you? Buyer beware.
Now, is CBD, the CBD that they sell in these co-ops, are there any controls on that? I mean, as far as potency or supposedly not having any THC, I mean, are there, Is there anything in place to guarantee what you're buying is what you're getting?
Well, the state is supposed to be checking that because the Food and Drug Administration is clearly not. The Food and Drug Administration is only over Epidiolex, which is the FDA-approved. And, in fact, I'd encourage the drug company that makes Epidiolex to sue all the states that are allowing CBD to be sold over the counter because they went through the rigors of the Food and Drug Administration to get their drug approved. What are these other people doing selling CBD, which is a CS5 drug, over the counter? Just like what's the state of California doing allowing CS1 drug, marijuana, to be sold?
Right.
Or THC, which is a CS3 drug, to be sold? I mean, this is just absolute insanity, people. Again, and let me warn you one more thing. In Epidiolex, one of the warnings is before you start Epidiolex or CBD, that you have a liver function test performed before starting. It's called a baseline liver function test. We want to make sure, because we know this drug damages the liver, and CBD is a drug. That's why they're taking it, because it's a drug. And so it damages the liver. Are they warning you about giving the liver function test? Is your bud tender telling you to get a liver function test before you start taking CBD?
Yeah.
I do as a pharmacist. Need to warn them if they're going to get Epidiolex to make sure that they had a liver function test done first. So they're selling this like it's candy. It's being sold everywhere. It's all over the internet. In fact, I saw Kim Kardashian's going to be having a CBD baby shower.
What does that mean?
Absolute insanity. They're going to be bringing in all types of CBD products. This contains THC, people. And oh, let me say one more thing, too. CBD is CBD. Cannabidiol is cannabidiol. They will try and confuse you and call it, oh, hemp-derived CBD. What does that mean? Hemp even has THC in it. They're trying to confuse the issue and call it hemp-derived CBD. That means it's CBD. That means it also has THC in it. And they've caught them multiple times. JAMA reported this years ago. The Journal of American Medical Association has reported that what it says on the label is not what it actually is. Nobody's regulating them. So, again, when they tell you, oh, it's 50% CBD, 50% THC, and when they tested it, not true.
Wow.
Okay? Buyer beware, not controlled by the Food and Drug Administration. This is controlled by the state of California and Lori Ajax and her group. And they've caught the labs in Sacramento falsifying their data when the labs are supposedly testing for pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, bacteria, fungi that's grown in these products, that they falsify the reports. They were caught just in December. They were caught last September. The Steep Hill Labs in the Bay Area, which was supposedly the national expert, they were caught not testing for all the pesticides that they were supposed to be testing for. So you're dealing with a fraudulent group, people that were skirting the laws before, and you're expecting them to really be providing scientific service for you?
Wow.
You need to be questioning what you're putting in your body.
So the CBD that they're selling over the counter, is that as a result of the legalization of marijuana in California? Is that now they can sell CBD over the counter?
No, they fraudulently are making the leap from hemp being allowed by our U.S. Congress, pushed through by our Republican-led Senate, pushed through the
farm bill.
Mitch McConnell pushed this through, and it passed the House and was signed by our president into law to now take hemp out of a CS1 status. And they are using this facade that it's hemp to create the CBD, which is actually, it's all a facade for THC. Their goal is to sell THC, the psychoactive component. That's the goal. And they are using now all these other facades of hemp and CBD to hide the THC content. They claim that hemp will have less than 0.3% THC. Well, when you have industrial hemp production, you have industrial amounts of THC then being created. They've also said it's going to be less than 0.3. Who's testing that? So all this is a facade to then generate THC production, and that's what they're doing. In fact, there was several thousand pounds of it being moved from Oregon into Idaho recently, and the guy said, I thought I was trucking hemp. and they tested it, and it was marijuana.
Who could have seen that coming?
Yeah.
We've got to take another quick break. When we come back, let's revisit just a couple of topics that we haven't discussed in this particular show, but we do have a lot of airtime with you, Dr. Drum, on this, the use of pot for PTSD and also for pain, and kind of where, you know, some more facts about that. We can point people to some resources because that is a big, big misnomer. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Kick back and let it do what it do. Now you can two-toke her, you can one-hit him. Puff it in a pipe and you can twist it in a stem. You can bake it in some brownies, smoke it through a ball. Roll up a great big fat one like old Cheech and Chong. Burn it through a hole in a can of Budweiser. If you can't take the heat, son, vaporizer. That old wacky tobacco, when you feel it creeping up on you. That old wacky tobacco, kick back and let it do what it do. Now do what you do.
And the dreams that you dream.
Amount of time here. I don't know which one of you wants to address this, but the, you know, the use of marijuana for PTSD and pain and all that. And then I guess we throwing in another thing, because a lot of times the CBD is promoted as something that would be good for like arthritis and that kind of stuff, and supposedly has no addicting properties. And well, we just found out it has THC in it, but they tell people it doesn't. So what do you have to say on that?
Well, I think the problem with it is we don't really know what's in a lot of the CBD oils that are put out there. There could be a little bit of an active ingredient, but not enough. I mean, there's so many different brands out there that we really don't know what we're getting if you are trying that CBD oil.
But enough to make
Am
you
I right,
possibly fail a drug test at work. Oops.
Sure.
Yeah, and that's a possibility.
Right, and again, there's a study, and I could send it to you, Aaron, a report from Ken Finn, and I'd also encourage you to have him come on your call. He's a pain specialist, MD, out of Colorado that speaks about this a lot. He was also down at that North American Cannabis Summit. He talks about these CB2 receptors potentially having an effect with inflammation, neuropathic pain, and maybe some cancer pain. Again, the studies that have been done with a combination product, Sativex, that's been done over in Europe, in which it was used for cancer pain. It's under investigation in the United States, and so I would encourage, if people do want to use it, to go through the National Institute of Health and get engaged in those studies for this, because that would be the safer product to use, not the stuff that's being sold in the pot shops that could be anything, as well as the anti-inflammatory effects. Again, that has not been proven. The only reason CBD was approved by the Food and Drug Administration was for very, very, very rare seizure syndromes that occur in like 1 in 40,000 kids. So it's not Dravet's and Lennox-Gastaut's are not common seizure syndromes, and those tend to be very drug-resistant seizure syndromes for that CBD was approved for. It was not approved for anything else. just for seizure syndromes, CBD. And it also contains THC. So, again, just a warning that you want to use CBD, you're running the risk of popping a positive for THC because these CBD products contain THC, which is the psychoactive component. With regards to PTSD, again, I would not promote its use. We know that drug use and PTSD do not go together well. These people are already potentially suicidal, and they found with cannabis use disorder syndromes increases the risk of actual suicides and attempted suicides when they looked at cannabis use disorder being found in these guys with PTSD. So the studies are prevalent out there saying they would not recommend using this. In fact, I know there's a gentleman up in Oregon that may be listening that was in the military that has now gotten himself clean as a result of he started down this road. He followed the fantasy that marijuana would be good for his PTSD, and it wreaked nothing but havoc in him. So people that think that this is a cure-all, they're badly, badly mistaken. This is an increased risk for suicide activity to actually occur by combining cannabis with somebody with PTSD, the worst thing you could be doing.
Good to know, because that is definitely not being promoted accurately to people.
And even the pain issues, again, Ken Finn will tell you that, again, it's for cancer pain, maybe. The only actual multiple sclerosis spasticity in a study that I saw recently, it's only effective in the upper extremities. It's not working for the lower extremities when they've tried it. What's the most common pain that most people have? Back pain. And this has no impact. In fact, when they did do studies to see would it lessen the amount of opiate use, they actually saw the opposite. When they were combining cannabis with these patients, they found that they needed more opiates when they combined in cannabis to try and alleviate their pain. So this fantasy that it will reduce opiate use is just that. Again, it's another selling point that they tried. They were looking at reductions. One of the studies you'll hear them quote is, oh, reduction in prescriptions for opiates happened when we legalized marijuana. Well, that reduction is going on as a result of the Food and Drug Administration coming down, as well as other state regulatory societies coming down on prescriptions of opiates. And they're saying now, and I'm sure many of you are now finding out, they're saying 7-day supply of opiates. That's it. You're not getting a 30-day supply. You're not getting 90 tablets now when you're seeing somebody. You're getting 7 or 10 or 14 to last you for 7 days, and that's it. So we are seeing a reduction in opiate prescribing. It has nothing to do with legalization of cannabis. In fact, when you combine cannabis and opiates, you increase your opiate use. That's what the scientific studies are showing.
We had a listener write in on the chat that Mercy, a local hospital here, reported in their drug screening, 39% tested positive for pot, which is vastly higher than other drugs that were in the screen. And also a couple of the high schools here on their self-reporting, one high school reported 80% use, and the other one reported 90% use. So there you go. You legalize it, and guess who's going to start using it?
Right.
And, yeah, you know, so again, I think they see that we're getting close to nearing the end. I think one of the key points that Corrine and I can both make and scream from the mountaintops, it's a lie. It's a lie when they tell you nobody dies from marijuana. That is a lie. Because if you'd like to go tell my sister that, I'll bring you over to the San Joaquin Cemetery where she's buried. And you can go tell that to her yourself.
And there's a website called Mom Strong. And if you go on there, there's many stories about parents that have lost their children to marijuana in different ways, from suicide and from other horrible ways in which marijuana took their lives. So I invite everybody to go on that website, because marijuana has made a lot of very unsubstantial claims, as well as CBD, to how it can cure just about everything.
Right.
So, you know, we have to be responsible for our own selves and our own health. I think a lot of people think somebody is out there looking out for us, and that's just simply not true nowadays.
Well, and I think they feel that since it's natural, you know, because that's been the big hype, since it's a natural product, it's not that bad if that's what their kids are into. It's better than alcohol. I'm told that all the time. You know, this
just
is so...
remember, what's being sold is not natural.
Yeah.
The natural product is 0.5 to 3%. And please bring me 0.5 to 3% THC that you purchase from a recreational store. I'd love to see natural marijuana.
Uh-huh.
You'll never find it. The average in the state of Colorado is 21% THC.
Wow.
That's in the weed. And then when we're talking about the butane hash oil, the dabs and oil, that's 70 to up to 99% THC.
Wow.
So please, bring me that natural 0.5 to 3%. They
no
will
no wonder people are freaking out.
They will laugh you out of the building. Of course, because it's an addictive substance.
I had a parent call me the other day, and he was all upset. He really didn't understand what was going on. His daughter, I think she was 14 or 15, was rushed to the hospital with tachycardia, and the father found out that she had vaped some marijuana, and it totally sent her into tachycardia, and she almost didn't make it when she got to the hospital. So
tachycardia is rapid heart rate, causes hypertension. They just lost the public defender, Adachi, in San Francisco, and curiously, it was missing in the title of their report from what he died from. It said alcohol and cocaine. Well, it also admitted in his toxicology, and they found it in the room, his marijuana and his benzodiazepine that he was under the influence of. And they said, oh, he had a cardiac event. Well, I was warning people before when I heard about marijuana being now sold like candy that you're going to see 50s and 60s and 70-year-olds dying of heart attacks because of the tachycardia, the increased heart rate, the hypertension that the THC will cause, undoubtedly will cause in these people.
Please do your homework, folks. All right, guys, we're out of time. Thank you so much for coming on with us, and we're sorry to cut you off unceremoniously. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
If I die young, bury me in satin, lay me down on a bed of roses, sink me in the river at dawn, send me away with the words of a love song. Oh-oh, oh-oh. Lord, make me a rainbow, I'll shine down on my mother, she'll know I'm safe with you when she stands under my colors, oh, and life ain't always what you think it ought to be, you know, ain't even gray, but she buries her baby, the sharp knife of a short life.